Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Aquí estamos. Aquí nos quedamos y aquí ganamos. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome to the Dog Pod, your home for fans of the 11-2 Pac-12 North champs, Alamo Bowl champs, number 8 team in the country, the Washington Huskies tackle football team. We got Law Dog, we got Mitch here. We are live from the Roanoke Inn. 100 plus years of existence in this place. Once a home of ill repute, and now a home for some of the greatest podcasts this country's seen.
Mercer Island's only historic landmark, BT, formerly a brothel, but it's welcoming us with open arms tonight.
It is. We are here full speed ahead. Gentlemen, let's get into it, man. So, hey, we're going to start at the end and work our way back in this recap of the 2022 season. It was Thursday, December 29th, 6 p.m., the 30th Alamo Bowl at the Superdome in San Antonio. Our second visit, this time against the Longhorns of Tech, UW with their 11th win of the season, 27-20 over Sark's Baby Horns. Let's talk about it.
Texas in their third Alamo Bowl in 4 years. They win the toss, BT, defer. Huskies start with the ball. You give Ryan Grubb a month to think about that next play call, and this is what happens.
Now Papa is his running back, and they'll start off with a pitch back with a flea flicker. He's going to unload deep, and it is caught for a first down by Jalen Polk. A 34-yard strike to start the game.
So the Huskies immediately going to the Frankenstein flea flicker to Taj Davis. But as the Huskies move the ball down the field here, Penix ends up with his worst play of the night, actually throws that interception to Jaron Thompson.
That was ugly.
Then the Longhorns, though, go three and out after a sack by Braylon Trice. The Huskies get a big play on special teams here where Eddie Olofosio gets the block punt.
Amazing.
Huskies go, end up tacking on the field goal. They go up 3-0. This is a lead, BT, that they would never relinquish. Texas answers, though, with a 78-yard drive on 10 plays. They opt to kick on the fourth and short to tie it up, but Penix then starts to get going a little bit. He goes 6-for-8, 5 of those 8 to his tight ends. They played a big role in this game, setting up 2nd and 6 from the Texas 42.
On 2nd and 6, Talapapa back in. He's got a stiff arm, a first down, and more. From 42 yards.
So 10-3 Washington at the end of the first, but both teams are having trouble getting things going offensively in the second. Texas turns it over on downs. Then both teams go three and out. They trade another set of punts. Now there's 4:43 left in the first half. Huskies get it again, work their way down to first and goal from the Texas 6-yard line, but they can't quite punch it in. They have to settle for another Peyton Henry field goal, so they go up 13-3 at the half. Texas coming out swinging in the third. It takes them just 7 plays to strike back. This time it was a 34-yard touchdown to Jonathan Brooks. Makes it 13-10 Huskies. Then the Huskies answer with a more balanced attack. They're starting to turn to the run a little bit more. They hand it off 5 times, but Penix goes with another 5 completions, setting up 1st and goal from the 6.
Penix swings it out to Davis, and he's in! Huskies answer with a touchdown throw from 6 yards. Westover did the dirty work to get him there.
Huskies leading it 20-10 now, and the defense gets a stop, if you want to call it that here. Quinn Edwards misses Xavier Worthy twice here on 2nd down and 3rd down, so the Longhorns have to punt it back with 5 minutes left in the third. Then BT, Mitch, 1 minute left in the third. We have seen Kalen DeBoer go for it on 4th down all season. You can just tell he was feeling uncertain about the situation right here. He's up 10 with an entire quarter left to go. It's 4th and 2. Roma Dunze gets that spot moved back short of the first down. The Huskies go into punt formation at the Texas 47. Then they scramble up to the line as though they're going to snap it. Sarkisian calls the timeout.
Coach, boy.
DeBoer gets the time he needs to set up the play, and then ultimately they come out of the timeout with their offense. Penix finds Culp again, one more time for 9 yards. The Huskies keep the drive alive. Then, 1st and goal. Penix gets stuffed for no gain, but it's setting up 2nd and goal from the 8.
Penix looking that way to the slant, and it is caught. A touchdown for McMillan. Got a run on the shoe tops. an 8-yard strike from Penix to Jalen McMillan.
This was essentially the game-winning drive for Washington. So they ended up with that fourth down conversion, taking it 90 yards, 14 plays, taking 7 minutes off the clock, and they go up 27-10. And you guys, I mean, this was like, we're rolling. We're rolling. But Texas comes right back with a touchdown drive of their own. They cut it to 27-17 after another Jonathan Brooks TD with just 9:50 to go. And, you know, you just can't change what you are. The run, I felt like it had been working all night. I was hoping they would just go to Talapapa here and just run some clock. But, I mean, and ultimately Penix ends up throwing 4 incomplete passes on this sequence. Even though they did take 5 minutes off the clock, I felt like this was the drive where Chris Peterson would have just, like, run that clock down for 9 minutes, down to, like, the 9-yard line, and then just taken a knee to end it, right? But ultimately, the Huskies end up going for it on this long 4th-and-11 from the Texas 37. They don't get it, and the Longhorns end up going right back down the field. But they ultimately have to settle for a field goal, which is probably the right move here. 27-20 to Washington with just 2:41 left to play. The Huskies can't quite ice it, but after they kick it back, they get a huge sack from Voit Tanuvi with 15 seconds left. They ice it. Washington wins the 30th Alamo Bowl, 27-20. This is their third-ranked opponent. I've seen some stuff on Twitter. Oh, well, they beat 4 ranked teams this year. Yeah, Michigan State finished 5-7. That doesn't count.
We're not counting that.
That
one
doesn't count. But they defeat their third-ranked opponent of the season, 2022. And I'm going to call it their best bowl victory since at least the 2010 Holiday Bowl when they beat 17th-ranked Nebraska. And 11-2, top 10 finish. What a season.
Amazing there, dude. You got a little hot there. I thought you were going to go full, like, Sark on a stadium staffer.
You know, Sark, I've ripped on Sark enough. Let's just take our win and go home.
Yeah, it was a tough look for Sark and our old boy Coach Katowski. And this was a road game. This was
for
a road game. This was 95% burnt orange, right? I mean, what a freaking win, man. That was incredible.
Hope you weren't flying Southwest Airlines to go to the game.
<got there. laughs>
Double whammy. I mean, I just love the look on Ryan Grubb's face when Sark called that timeout on the fourth down and said, oh, you're going to do that? Okay, we're going for it.
Yeah, that's right. Amazing.
No, Sark gave you a gift there. But honestly, we talked about this in the preview show, right? He has always kind of given away a game or two on the schedule that he shouldn't have. And I'm not saying Texas should have won this game, but I just feel like we have the better coach, and it really showed.
All those concerns that we had in our preview show about the Dogs not, are they going to get up for this? They wanted to be in the Rose Bowl, and a few players had made comments about that. I'm like, hey, this isn't quite where we wanted things to end up, but they all showed up to play. This is a well-coached team. It was great. Love seeing it. Hey, so Alamo Bowl was incredible. What a way to cap off this season. As we talked about, we're finishing in an 11-win season, number 8 in the country, but let's rewind back to the beginning of the season and recap it a bit. First of all, Vegas had the Dogs at 7.5 wins. That was the over. That was the over for this. Mitch, take us back. Let's get that season started. How do we do?
Well, convincing win against Kent State started off, and as well as Portland State. You started seeing the Penix magic coming out, which was quite fantastic. And then, obviously, the huge win against Michigan State at home, 39-28, to really get the program on the map and rolling. A win at home again against Stanford, and boy, that set up a huge game against UCLA.
Absolutely did, and this is, I think, when the team was feeling really good about ourselves. That Michigan State one, amazing. So, first road game of the year, UCLA, we traveled down to Pasadena, it's week 5, and like, in hindsight, maybe not the best team to start the away games off, Friday night game against an undefeated UCLA team. But like thinking back on it, facing a UCLA team that needed, a second-half field goal to beat Southern Alabama. So we're all feeling pretty good. This just wasn't the Huskies' night. They got down to a big 33-10 deficit after a pair of uncharacteristic Mike Penix picks. Our old buddy, linebacker Leiatu Latu. Man, what a freaking game.
Big
safety
game
in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like many trips to Pasadena to face UCLA, just wasn't our night. Final score 32-40, and I don't think it was that close. Like, same thing, the Michigan game, I don't think it was as close. I think it was such a convincing Husky win. This was not that close. I don't think UCLA was in it. Now, UCLA would, of course, go on and lose the next 2 weeks, Oregon, and then another home loss to Arizona. Gave up a 28-14 lead in the Sun Bowl to Pitt for a loss. So not maybe the season that UCLA thought they were going to have in that week 5, but that one was tough. Not near as tough as the next week, ASU. And look, a place that has given the Dogs fits over the years, Sun Devil Stadium, Tempe, it just is not our place, man. Facing a 1-4 team that had just fired their coach. We're going to be fine. This is our year, right? This is our year in Tempe. The Dogs knock out Emory Jones and the quarterback, but then we just make a hero out of Trenton Bourgeau, who, again, they build up a huge second quarter lead, scoring 21 unanswered. We had picks going off offensive linemen's heads. Two final drives down by 7. We just can't move the ball and turn over on downs. 45-38 Sun Devils. Huskies fall to 4-2 and drop out of the ranks. I think this is the point that all of us in Husky Nation were feeling like not awesome. Like starting to see what happened. Maybe Michigan wasn't that good. Maybe this, I don't know about this Husky team. It's 4-2, feeling in the dumps. But then, hey, second half of the season takes over.
Yeah, and the second longest winning streak in the country, BT, starts right here next week against Arizona. We were thinking they were looking a little plucky behind Jed Fish, and the Huskies end up getting into a big shootout at home, but win it 49-39. And then the question was, can they go to Cal, where they've had some a little bit of trouble in recent years, and win on the road for once? And they finally pulled it off with a 28-21 victory that maybe doesn't look like their best work of the season in retrospect, but that gave them momentum going into their bye, got them back into the rankings, and then when Oregon State showed up on that Friday night game, they really played what's probably going to end up being their best, one of their two or three best quality wins of the season, beating the Beavers at home, and then, of course, going to Autzen and knocking off the Ducks when Dan Lanning, you know, couldn't get out of his own way. He didn't have the tattoo at that point, so maybe he, you know, was thinking more clearly. But then the Huskies come home, pummel Colorado, and then head to Pullman for the Apple Cup. I think we were all confident going into this one. Huskies were rolling at this point. Win at 51-33 to earn that berth in the Alamo Bowl. So all in all, this was just ending the season on a high note with, you know, the wins against your rivals, Oregon State and Oregon, probably being your two best wins of the season until that.
That new stadium. I mean, ultimately, Oregon State finished the season. I think, look, their fans have to be so psyched about how they finished the year and look just super dominant against a Florida team that Utah couldn't take care of. I mean, I thought they just looked great. Ultimately, in hindsight, where you said, like, that Michigan State win maybe wasn't as big of a deal as it was, that Oregon State win was probably bigger than we thought it would be at the time.
Absolutely.
They were a great team.
Totally agree.
Yeah, what a season. We finish 11-2. Let's get into some of our Dog Pod awards. Offensive player of the year. How do you say, Mitch?
Okay, but I'm going to give it to the left side of our offensive line.
Ooh, there you go.
I'm going to combine Jackson Kirkland with, what is it, Troy
Fautanu.
And, oh, my God, I'm going to amalgamate them into one person, one big human body. They were incredible, guys. Talk about keeping Penix clean all year. He would roll their way a bunch and just have time to do what he was going to do. Man, that was just fantastic. Call it a cop-out. Offensive player of the year, left side of the offensive line.
It's hard to pick just one. I mean, I think, you know, you had guys playing at an elite level all season. I think Roger Rosengarten doesn't get enough credit for the blindside protection of Penix all year. He wasn't even honorable mention all conference, which I think is I think that is absolutely a crime. And the Law Dog's going to look into a special prosecutor to investigate it because I think that is absolutely heinous that he was so unrecognized for how good he was this season. So I'm with you on the O-line, Mitch. I think you're crazy not to pick Michael Penix, but that's cool. That's what you're here for on the Dog Pod.
That's right. I mean, it's a contrarian pick, but I totally agree with you. I mean, what Mike Penix did. And hey, quick shout out, Sunday, 1:00 down at Home Street Bank in U Village. Our buddy JB, Husky JB, has been on the podcast before. So part of his team is hosting Mike Penix down there in U Village at Home Street Bank. Just roll down there with a shirt or with a hat, get that thing signed, and get the Big Penix energy. Meet Big Mike down there, because what a season he had. Unreal.
You know, another thing, I'm glad you gave kudos to the O-line. You know, coming out of 2020, right, there was a lot of high hopes for the Huskies going into the Jimmy Lake second year. And a lot of it was built around that O-line. We knew that the talent was there, and they had done so well in 2020. And it's nice to see them kind of, like, have a big rebound, because 2021 was a rough season for these guys, and they had a huge rebound, maybe the best O-line in the country by a lot of measures this year.
I mean, that's a great point. And how about, you know, everybody is singing the praises of this new coaching staff, how present was them to look at the tape? And there were a lot of interviews on this with Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer saying, like, hey, that 2021 season was an aberration, and Scott Huff
can coach.
Yeah, and he can recruit.
Yeah,
and we're going to keep him on the staff. Man, what a great call now in retrospect.
It was pretty unusual, right? After they had played so badly in 2021. But I think they saw what we all saw, right? We were hoping and thinking that this was going to be a strong O-line going into 2021. It turns out, you know, it just wasn't the right mix. But going in 2022, they proved their doubters wrong.
Love it. And I tell you, if you could put Rome and Jalen together as one, I mean, geez. I mean, and look, if there wasn't a Rome or wasn't a Jalen, the other one would
have
had.
Don't forget about my man Jalen Polk.
Yeah, and Polk was incredible, too. They had such a great year. So, hey, let's talk about the other side of the ball. How about that defensive player of the year?
So I struggle with this one a little bit. But for my money, I'm going with Jeremiah Martin, the senior. 11 tackles for loss, 8.5 of those are sacks, 2 forced fumbles, just a bunch of big plays on defense this year. It seemed like he was always on the field for a team that had a lot of injuries on defense this year, right? I mean, Ulufoshio was out for a time, you know, most of your secondary missed time. Jeremiah Martin was your rock on defense, and I just felt like he was rock solid. So I'm going to go with him. It's a close call with Braylon Trice, a little bit more of a sexy pick with those 10 sacks. He'll be back next year. He can earn the defensive award from the Law Dog next year. But this year it's going to Jeremiah Martin. I also considered Latuli Gassanoa,
yep,
the stalwart on the D-line. I mean, we were talking about the last couple of years how we were missing guys like Levi Onwuzurike, Greg Gaines, Vita Vea.
Danny Shelton,
been
yep
here. Latuli Gassanoa really broke out this year, had a nice year. So Alex Cook, you know, your captain. You know, with the play of the year at Autzen, but ultimately I'm sticking with Jeremiah Martin.
Yeah, like I probably had Braylon Trice in there, 13 tackles for loss, 10 sacks, second in total tackles, and he could cover when he had to drop back for the size that he was. But man, you can't go wrong.
And how great of how many of those guys are coming back?
Yeah, I mean, Martin's. I wanted to give him a little bit of a lift because he's a senior.
Yeah,
you know, right. And I do like to acknowledge and give respect to the seniors who have given everything to your program, and they're leaving because they have to, not
right
because they want
that's
to.
Right.
So I wanted to give it to him, but honestly, all of those guys on the D-line were awesome all year, and the fact that you've got, I thought Savell Smalls probably played his best game in the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, right? I think he took a step.
Yeah.
For sure.
And you have ZTF coming back. I think we're going to be right where we left off on the D-line going into next year with all the returners.
Yeah, I'd agree with that front seven. So many great players on the defense, but it was great. Now, hey, look, that was looking back. I think we got to start looking forward. And, of course, this is a new era. We weren't talking about this when we started this podcast a decade ago, but the transfer portal. Before you get into recruiting, you got to talk about that immediate need. So transfers out and transfers in. Mitch, don't bury the lead. We got some big news about 4 hours ago, and then let's hear the rest of them.
Yeah, I mean, breaking hot off the press, Sam Huard's going to put his name into the transfer portal. You know, we saw this play out a couple of years back, right, where we had what's-his-face from Bothell, the quarterback who put his name in and then withdrew it. So, like, let's play it out. He might still return to the University of Washington, but quite frankly, I think Sam's buried on the depth chart. Let's just be realistic here. And he wants to play, and I respect him for that, right? He committed to his hometown school legacy. He spent time in the program and, by all accounts, did everything right. I wish him nothing but the best, and I hope he gets some playing time and some scratch somewhere. And, you know, we'll just see where he lands if he does, in fact, transfer.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. He was a guy who, you know, was, you know, the Arch Manning of Washington State, let's call it.
Yeah, that, yeah,
right?
Sure.
And he was a hugely heralded recruit. Probably Jimmy Lake's kind of only big signing
yeah
that he made.
Yeah.
And so it is tough to see him go with all the legacy. If he does go, again, you know, if he does, we're going to be left with 2 scholarship quarterbacks. So that's going to be kind of a problem.
Like, yeah.
He's going to get the Bobby Wagner reception when and if he ever comes back. Because I think,
for sure,
you know, he's still like a beloved Husky, and I wish him the best. But, hey, he's not the only one. There's some others.
Totally. You know, safety Cam Williams, we heard a lot about that. That's a little painful considering our depth in the secondary.
Heading to Georgia Southern.
Yeah, yeah. Defensive tackle Kual Piabopa.
Yeah,
out of Hawaii, or going to Hawaii. Cornerback Zachariah Spears heading to UConn and playing for Jimmy Mora.
Yeah,
right wide receiver Junior Alexander, undecided. Tight end Caden Jumper, undecided. Linebacker Daniel Humuli, really was hoping to see him kind of flash a little bit. Mm-hmm. Never quite did. Also undecided on where he's going. Offensive lineman Victor Kern out of Texas, also undecided. Running back Javion Sunday, undecided on where he'll be heading. Boy, that running back room is starting to get awful crowded with some of the incoming crop.
Yeah, we'll get to the incoming guys. I just wanted to say a couple things about, one, Victor Kern, a guy who was starting under the John Donovan offense.
That's
and
right.
Then lost his job. And so I think we could all see it coming, but he's got 1 year of eligibility left. He most likely would have been – this team loses its entire interior three offensive linemen. He probably could have stuck around and won the job back, but you understand if he wants to go elsewhere. And then one more thing on Caden Jumper. You know, this isn't a team that's – kind of known, I guess, for using the tight end. We had a lot of movement on the tight end on the roster last season. But then you have a huge game where you know, Quinton Moore, Culp, Westover, all getting action, significant action, the Alamo Bowl. But then they go out and sign Josh Cuevas, who's one of those incoming transfers, right? And so I think Jumper was just feeling like he was buried on the depth chart, so he's gone. But you're starting to get like, – you signed a tight end because you were thin there already. And now one's leaving out the door. So,
you know, I think one more thing that's a little interesting to me to see where these guys are landing. You know, I wouldn't say they're landing at schools that are necessarily known for making playoffs and et cetera. But if you look at some of the transfers out from last year, they were clearly landing at lower competition levels.
And other than Latu.
Yeah, other than Latu. It's absolutely, right? And it seems like that bar is raising a little bit here with some of these transfers out.
So that's actually a point that I really wanted to get into, is I think that Washington, we you know, you talked about BT, we didn't have the transfer portal several years ago. Mm-hmm. We barely had it a year ago. But in the last couple of years that we've seen, I think Washington's actually kind of ended up where they're showing up in kind of a sweet spot. They're ended up in a place where they've been a good, attractive destination for guys who are at Power 5 programs like Cam Bright, right, or Talapapa,
mm-hmm.
right, or some of the incoming guys that are coming in this year, like, and we'll get to this a little more, Dylan Johnson, Jeremy Bernard, Jabbar Muhammad, right? So you've got starters at Power 5 schools, right, that are coming to Washington because they like what's going on. But meanwhile, you've got guys who are buried on the depth chart at Washington who are looking for playing time elsewhere, and we're not necessarily losing high-quality guys. So I think both years in the transfer portal's existence, the Huskies have had not just upgrades, but significant upgrades, and I wonder if that's something that we can count on continuing going forward, because I think that seems to be the trend.
Yeah, I agree. And like, on the dog pod, we don't talk about like rumor and conjecture, but the story is out now, and I would just say that I'm glad that we're kind of holding up to that, our like some standard of character, where like what happened to Kalpa Hope and Danny Humuli, like everyone knew there was an incident, and finally it was reported, like they, you know, were in a bar fight in the Ave, and you know, that sent a bouncer or a bartender to the hospital, and like in the end, like they don't play again, and they end up in the transfer portal. There's stories like that where I think that kind of stuff happens. And I'm glad that it's not swept under the rug and that there aren't consequences. I hope that sends a message to the rest of the team. But I think there's others that, like, just don't find their fit and go try to find a better home.
Yeah, or a guy like Latu who couldn't get medically cleared, right? Finds a doctor at UCLA who cleared him.
Who cleared him, yeah. And then a lot of ours are like, I'd like to go talk to that doctor who didn't clear him because clearly that guy was playing. But, hey, a lot coming out, but a lot coming in, too.
Yeah, so we already mentioned a little bit, right? But Daniel Nagata, running back from ASU, has got three to play two. He was, you know, kind of a pretty highly recruited kid coming out of high school a few years ago. So he's an addition at running back. And then he had Dylan Johnson, running back from Mississippi State, also with three to play two, who had kind of become a second string, but getting on the field plenty for Mississippi State. And obviously they're going through a lot of change down there.
Yeah.
And so maybe he's looking at an opportunity at Washington with Talapapa leaving. And obviously, you know, there's going to be playing time for hire right now, right? And then our old friend Jeremy Bernard, wide receiver who kind of didn't quite find his fit with this coaching staff when Kalen DeBoer and then Junior Adams left for Oregon, and then he made the decision to ask for his release. Now he's back with four to play three. He played for virtually the entire season for Michigan State, but he's going to fit right in. I already mentioned Josh Cuevas, the Cal Poly tight end, who's got three to play three. And then Jabbar Muhammad, corner at Oklahoma State, with three to play two. And he was, you know, one of the better corners in the Big 12 this
year. Honorable mention, Big 12. I love that one.
And then just two more. Raylan Goforth, linebacker at USC. He actually started for the Trojans in 2020 and 2021. But he kind of got buried by an incoming transfer at SC this year. So he's looking for playing time, coming back to coming to Washington where he can probably get on the field right away. I mean, with Cam Bright exiting, he'll stand a good chance to start. And then the most interesting probably of all of them is Zach Durfee, this edge from Sioux Falls, who's got three to play three. And Sioux Falls, not the NAIA program that it was when DeBoer was the coach. They're now Division II, which is kind of more along the lines of like Cal Poly and some of the other, like where Jordan Perryman was and that kind of level. So, again, I think, you know, you look around and go, the guys who are losing probably weren't getting on the field. I would say a majority of these guys are going to see the field next year for the Huskies, particularly Muhammad, which is a big area of need, a corner.
Big time. I mean, I hope that guy plugs right in as a starter and he's what he thinks he is. But this isn't the end. We need at least three to make the math work. You need to lose at least three more scholarship players just to make the math work today.
Yeah,
so this isn't the end.
I think there's definitely attrition will still be forthcoming, right? Or you might have a freshman who doesn't qualify or whatever. The coaches know. They're going to manage it. After spring ball, there's going to be a little, probably another round.
Yeah, but and also, it's probably not three. It's four now because you're going to have to get another quarterback.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You have to make space for another quarterback. Can't go into the season with two scholarship quarterbacks. Like, no, there's got to be space for another. So.
Otherwise, we're going to Greek Row for the third stringer, Mitch.
I love it.
See that arm? Roll it up. So, look, I mean, that's a part of the recruiting story, but let's get into what we think of 2023, the old school recruiting recap.
Yeah, so I'm not going to go player by player here, but just I think at the high level, I think kind of one of the highlights here. I mean, the highlight for me was Caleb Presley, right? Staying home, a guy from Rainier Beach who's committed to Oregon all year. We saw him in Husky gear showing up, at times this season. Kind of felt like it was going to happen. And like I said on the last podcast, even though Oregon's made a lot of inroads, this is still Seattle, okay? Caleb Presley's still a Seattle guy. Not only that, but he's well known to, you know, have a lot of connections and friends, and he's like going to be actively recruiting for the Huskies. So this was a big get, maybe not along the Buda Baker lines, but it was important.
Yeah, but you know, I love the fact in his announcement tweets he had a shout out at Buda.
Yeah,
too. That was cool.
That was so cool,
right?
Like, yeah, no,
there's legacy there.
And it was on the mind, right? It was on the mind. Like everyone was looking at this Oregon guy. Who, you know, was committed, who wasn't sure about the new coach, right? There's a lot of parallels. But he was one of five DBs that this coaching staff brought in. Should mention Thaddeus Dixon, who's a junior college DB, who a lot of people say is a freak athlete. So he could be, you know, maybe a sleeper type, a Kyler Gordon type down the line. But so the coach is clearly going after that secondary with this class. And then the other thing they did, five offensive linemen. So you're losing three starters this year. Three guys are graduating. The fact they're bringing in five offensive linemen, I think, is a good sign. And then also, you know, the four-star receivers and Tayshawn Lyons, who is the commitment, the verbal commitment that's still hanging out there that did not sign. He's waiting to sign in February, so we're kind of waiting on pins and needles for him. But then I think, you know, the other big takeaway from this class is just the fact they did not get a quarterback. And DeBoer has spoken about that. He doesn't want to just take a guy. You might be in a position now where you have to just take a guy. And there's a February signing class that's like, or signing day that's coming up. So find a guy.
Yeah. Can you flip somebody at this point? Because I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's an unheralded two-star quarterback out there that we think we know something about that somebody doesn't know, right? I
mean, and there was some talk about the Purdue freshman quarterback. What was his name? But he withdrew from the transfer portals, returning to Purdue. I saw that today. So you know, this is going to be the game going forward. I think we're in a great position with DeBoer. I'm glad we're in this position with DeBoer and not Jimmy Lake and John Donovan trying to find a quarterback in the transfer portal or this late in the recruiting process. At least DeBoer's got a good sales pitch to give these guys, and hopefully he'll come through with one because we need the dudes.
And who knows, you guys? Like, this is kind of uncharted territory with this thing to a certain extent. Heward might change his mind.
Yeah, that's right. He could
right?
Come back.
But Dylan Morris, coming up behind him, will be a senior in 2024. So Penix is your starter in 2023. God willing.
Right.
And Dylan Morris has 1 year of eligibility after that. So
we got to have a plan.
Thin.
Yeah,
you're
we're thin.
Thin. Yeah, and look, and I think you have to believe that we're going to get the Dylan Morris that we saw during the COVID year, and that, you know, the Dylan Morris that we saw last year was, you know, that little bit of the John Donovan boogaloo and the team kind of bailing out that, you know.
I thought he showed well when he got on the field this year. I mean, I think the better coaches and the better schemes and all that are going to help him as well. And he will have a lot of weapons when he gets on the field.
Yeah.
Well, let's preview the season. So before we get into the games that we're going to play this year and talk about the 2023 schedule, at least who we're playing the home, who we're playing on the road, we don't know the actual dates yet. I'm just going to throw this out there. We're going to do a show, and probably we'll be off for a couple months, but we're going to do a show where we actually get down to the depth chart. But I'll just throw this out there real quick. So this could be your starters. Mike Penix, quarterback, running back. You got Cam Davis, Richard Newton, Dylan Johnson, and Daniel Dugata probably pushing as well. Wide receiver, Jalen McMillan. I assume Rome's gone myself. If I have to bet on that, I don't think he comes back. It's probably a 60, 40, 70, 30, but I don't think he comes back. Taj Davis, Jalen Polk, Giles Jackson, Jeremy Bernard maybe pushing for time as well.
Yep.
Tight ends, you got Westover and Culp coming back. Maybe we see a bit of Quentin Moore. Maybe Cuevas. And Ryan Otten, I think, could push at some point, if not this year, the year after. Line, Troy Faiotanu, Kaleppo, Mateo Mele, Garen Hatchett, Roger Rosengarten. I'll take a pause there before I talk about the defensive line. Anything you think I missed there?
Well, I think Mateo Mele in the middle.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be one of the keys. In all my years of following Husky football, you always wanted kind of a veteran, a proven guy to be your starting center. And Mele, I don't think, is to that level yet. But then again, I don't know that they have anybody else, unless it's like a Bonavalu, but
Bonneville's gone. He's graduated.
Bonneville's gone. I'm thinking of Kaleppo. Kaleppo. Thankfully, you're returning your bookends, Faiotanu and Rosengarten. But I think in the middle, we've got some question marks there.
It should be.
Yeah. But that being said, like, I'm excited about the depth that they built on the offensive line. The young guys kind of coming up. The Hatchetts, all that kind of stuff.
They've recruited well behind them.
Really well. And now they got a show, right? But I'm feeling pretty comfortable with the talent that they have to slot in there.
That's right. So on the defensive side, look at your front. Fatui Tuitele, Latuli Gasanoa, MJ Ale, Voight Tanufi, Javon Parker pushing for time. Edges, Braylon Trice, ZTF, and Savelle Smalls.
I mean, you're bringing everyone back but Martin.
Besides Martin.
And this is one of the upsides from the coaching staff this year that played a lot of guys. Everybody gets in.
Right.
You know, they rotate quite a bit. And those guys got experience that are coming like Smalls and like Tanufi and
And if Ale takes a step too,
wow.
And so we were just talking earlier about Smalls showing up in the Alamo Bowl. If those guys both kind of push and press, that could be a big aspect
they totally
of their season
could be.
Next year.
Yeah, their size returning. I feel better about that. Mm-hmm. Linebackers, Alfonso Tupatala, Eddie Olufosio, Carson Bruner, maybe Raylan Goforth is pushing for time as well.
Right. Yeah.
The linebackers. Huskies, probably Dom Hampton. I don't know who else is pushing on the Husky side. Like Cam Fab, I think, had some games and had some times where he was struggling.
I thought Hampton
find a spot.
Was the best DB start to finish this year, personally.
Yeah, at that Husky position.
Yeah.
Cornerbacks, Meech Powell, Jabbar Muhammad. I mean, we really expect him to come in as a starter this year. Mm-hmm. Julius Erving, we expect him, I think, to get healthy and come back and have a great year. Javion Green, I think, was one who came in and saw more time than we probably thought he was going to. That, I think, is probably your corners. Safety, look, okay, here we go. Asa Turner. I don't know. Done, Esteem, I don't know. I think you might end up seeing some of those corners that I just missed or just mentioned move over to the safety side, but I don't know.
I think Asa Turner played well at the beginning of the season. We know all of them were banged up at some point. We don't know if that affected Turner as the season went on. He definitely, you know, he'll be in his last year. He'll be a fifth-year senior. Like, you know, it's probably time to see what he can do. I personally have been hearing a lot about Nunley and Dunn kind of coming up there, but we have not recruited this position particularly well.
Yeah.
And you might have room for a freshman, you know, come in, and if, yeah. if they're ready to play right away, they're going to have a chance.
You know,
got
I mean,
five of them.
I think the knock on, you know, Ace has clearly been his tackling, which was pretty bad at times this year. Hopefully he can take a step, and maybe they can fix that, right? You want to see that guy, hopefully, you know, kind of finish off his career as a starter. I think we're going to see one or two true freshmen play back there. That's just my gut feel, you know? Like, I think that's why they're recruiting it that hard. I love what they're bringing in through the transfer portal with Muhammad. Like, hopefully that happens. I just have this feeling they're bringing in some dudes. And so hopefully they start seeing a little scratch and they at least raise some of the competition in the bar that they have there.
I'm sure we're going to talk about it all spring and summer, but it's the question mark. I mean, it's
of
the area
whole
where
team.
We, of
I mean,
the
it's
whole
a,
team.
It's the difference between you winning the Pac-12 and making a run at the playoff next year or, you know, being 9-3, 10-2.
And are there some coaching tweaks that are coming to help that out from an assistant perspective as well? Like, I don't know.
Spring ball is going to be interesting from that perspective.
Yeah, you hope we start seeing some big names.
One last thing, though. Like, what an opportunity for those guys to develop with Penix on the side, hopefully pressing them and peppering those receivers.
That's right.
Right? Like, they're going to be up against some pretty significant and stiff competition, maybe some of the best in the Pac-12, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
hopefully
right.
that helps them advance.
So, you know, special teams, I'll just be real quick. We have Jaden Green returning back punts, but we need a kicker as well. So, like, we've got some stuff happening.
I mean, Grady Gross is on the roster, BT.
Yeah, that's right. I hope that's it. Yeah, I hope that's it. Unless we can, like, you know, we can get Cameron Van Winkle to come back and do a PhD or something. I think he has eligibility. So, look, that's your starters. But I think let's talk about what the season looks like. And unfortunately, thank you, Pac-12. We have no idea what the order is going to be. But we at least we can get the thing started. So, look at our non-conference schedule. And I think this one is real, real interesting. September 2nd, we get things started off, and it's Boise State at home. Here we go. Andy Avalos and the team. Boise State finished the year 10-4, winning their division, losing in the conference championship of the Mountain West. They had losses at 17-34 at Oregon State. Doesn't look too bad right now. 10-27 at UTEP. That is not good. 28-31, they lost to BYU. 16-28, lost to Fresno, a really good Fresno State. They finish off with a win against North Texas in the Frisco Bowl that didn't cover. It was a lot closer than a lot of people thought it was going to be, 35-32. Look, I'm not going deep into that team until August, but they returned Taylen Green, their 6'6 freshman quarterback who took over for Hank Bachmeyer. Look, he threw for 2,000 yards, 14 passing touchdowns, 10 rushing touchdowns. He can move in space. He's one of those running quarterbacks that can give us a lot of fits. They have a 1,000-yard rusher returning in George Helani. Look, third in the Mountain West. Their defense... Look, they were solid. They allowed fewer than 19 points a game. Like, this one is – Boise State's going to be a tough one at home. We're going to be favored, but this is not Portland State that we're getting.
Well, for sure, but it's also not Chris Peterson's Boise
That's
State.
Right.
So, I'm with the amount of talent that we have coming back at home, I trust these coaches. I expect the Huskies to win. I'm not saying we have to cover to make me happy, but win the game.
Now here, look, this is the easiest game on the schedule next year. You know, September 9th, Tulsa at home. Tulsa finished 5-7, ninth place in the American. Losses against many, many, many teams. Wyoming, Ole Miss, Cincy, Navy, SMU, Tulane, Memphis, who are like, you know, all decent teams. But they finished with strong wins against South Florida and Houston under ninth-year head coach Phil Montgomery. But this is a Tulsa team that I think has given others fits in the past but is coming off a real tough season. So I think this will be interesting. The big one. Here you go on the road game. September 16th at Michigan State. Look, huge turning point for our program. We talked about it. But to be fair, what we ultimately saw in the 2022 Spartans, who finished 5-7, fifth in the Big Ten East, 10th in the Big Ten in scoring, they missed a bowl game for just the third time since 2006 this year. They had seven players charged in an assault in the tunnel in their classic against Michigan. This was not the 2021 Spartans we thought coming back to Husky Stadium. Now, I'm going to throw out a big buzzkill to everybody. 2 years ago, that squad was 11-2, eighth in the AP. I hate to say that, but look, that's why they were so confident coming in, man. And look, we see what Kenneth Walker's doing for the Seahawks.
Right.
How big of a miss that was. You know, and look, but like they're losing Jaden Green. The Wazoo transfer was their best weapon offensively. He's leaving. Their best proctor in the last 2 years in receiver, Jeremy Bernard, he's here in Montlake. I don't know if the quarterback, Peyton Thorne's job is 100% locked in. He started every game the last two seasons, and he's going to be a senior. But, like, there's talk. I was looking at some of the Michigan State boards of this kid, Noah Kim, who's a backup, or maybe Caden Hauser, big four-star recruit, who, like, they don't know who the starter's going to be. Like, they lose their running back and quarterback commits both for the 2023 season. But Mel Tucker still, like, he's, you know, he's got the program going. 25th-ranked class. They've got some juice. I think the defense is going to improve. They signed a really strong class. They had like all up to their Cal Halliday, all Big Ten linebacker. Front seven should be good. Where they suck, sound familiar? Their secondary. Penix exploited them big time, and they got exploited throughout the Big Ten season. And look, with not a lot of hope coming up forward, but look, that game, it's going to be in East Lansing. It's going to be a big one. Hostile environment.
And you know they're going to have it circled after what happened in Seattle.
Oh, they want us bad.
This last year, right? I think the most exciting part about this game, guys, is a potential road dog.
Yes, in the shores of East Lansing, Michigan.
There's no shore. I don't know what you know about it. Yeah, I don't.
There's a river somewhere.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Skip stones.
I wouldn't be so sure. I think this is one where your defensive line absolutely dominated at home. Not just Penix, but your D line played amazing this September against Michigan State, and your O line played very well. You're replacing three starters. We got two games to figure that out because you're going to be facing a Big Ten team up front on both sides. That's going to be a big key to that game.
Yeah, it's going to be a line of scrimmage battle, and it's going to be exciting to see what happens.
Yeah, look, and look, we don't have that Portland State here. You know, we got, you know, there's all, you know, there's all big teams that are coming in. It's going to be a great schedule, and the home schedule. We'll talk about that in a bit, but let's get started because we've got some tough road games coming up on this schedule.
And, you know, BT, I don't know why you're giving the Pac-12 so much grief here on their scheduling, right? It's kind of like a late-night casino trip. You're not sure you're going to be at the tables, the slot machines, the sports book. All right, so we are at Arizona. We'll see what happens with the Desert Dogs there, the Jedfish recovery. We always get nervous.
Delora's back.
Delora's back. The most hated quarterback in the Pac-12 by his own teammates.
By his own teammates. That's right.
It'll be interesting to see where that falls. Oregon State, the Beavers, that's going to be a really big deal. They're going to have
DJ
that rocking. I think it's going to be really interesting with their new quarterback coming in. Oh, my gosh. Like, that's going to be one to
circle.
We
don't even have a date, but Law Dog's going to be there. I could tell you that right now. I got friends in Oregon who have already invited me down. We're going.
Yeah, that's a great 24, 48-hour road trip.
At Stanford, hopefully feel pretty good about their recovery. You know, what they're going to be going through some transition times. We'll let that sort out.
It was a tough place for us on the grass in that quiet stadium, man.
Dude, it's too quiet.
It's too quiet.
Too much Chardonnay.
Jimmy Lake won there. So can DeBoer.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And then the big one at the USC Trojans, the Coliseum. I'm very much looking to go forward to going to that. I've never done a game in the Coliseum. That's going to be a really fun one. Potentially, guys, two Heisman Trophy candidates up against each other.
I think that's going to be the game that's circled on everybody's calendar all season, right? I mean, we got the Heisman Trophy winner and the Pac-12 runners up versus the Pac-12 should have been's. And both teams loaded and fully having big expectations. That's going to be a nationally televised.
And that's another one where I think the scheduling is going to be fascinating to see how it plays out, see how the buys might come into play. Is it early? Is it later?
There's a theory floating around online, depending on how hard you want to look, that the Pac-12 schedule is being delayed because the ADs thought that the schedule was too favorable to USC and UCLA in their last year in the conference wanted some alternatives. And so asked for some scheduling to run some new models so that they could. So that's another dynamic of this to watch. I mean, this is going to be the Huskies' last trip to Los Angeles as a conference opponent. That will be the scheduling, Mitch. To your point, that is exactly right.
Yeah. Give me a Saturday game. Don't give me this Friday night Pasadena crap.
Prime time. Last year.
Come on, prime time. Let's have it. So, hey, you want to talk about getting tickets this year? This is a great home schedule.
I'll take it.
You'll take this from a Pac-12 home schedule?
Well, Arizona State, the revenge game.
The revenge game.
I mean, I think that's one where, you know, we haven't won in Tempe in over 20 years. And you look at – that's always been a tough out for the Huskies. I think that they will definitely be looking at that game. You've already heard the unfinished business and stuff coming out of the Husky players. I think they're going to have that one circled this year. I think they want revenge on Arizona State. Then you got Cal at home. Cal and Stanford, I think, both in this position of really suffering in the transfer portal era. Not necessarily NIL, but just the portal is so tough for them. They're not getting guys through. And I think Cal is probably a little bit of a sinking ship. So,
do you think Wilcox is sitting there if he really did turn down the Oregon job? Right? You think he's sitting there saying, like, did I mess up? Or is he like, no, this is what I signed up for. I'm good with it. I'm never going to get fired.
Because he's so handcuffed.
What I heard about, and this is all rumor and conjecture, I'm just calling it out right now. I'm not reporting this. But what I heard was that Wilcox wanted to be in charge, wanted to be the CEO, and was basically told, like, everyone reports to Uncle Phil, and you will too.
You got
to
kiss the ring.
You got to kiss the ring. And so he said, I'll take a pass. So
Wilcox
did,
says, I do not bend the knee. I bend the knee for no one.
I know one king in the North whose name is Washington, BT.
That's great.
So then he got Oregon. I think that's going to be obviously a huge battle. We have not played Oregon well in Seattle. I mean, we played them better down there, frankly, than we played them in Seattle recently. And then the big one is Utah, I think. To me, that's one where you got to really show your program. That's a mature program. You know, we know that the talent is not at a – it's not at an SEC or an elite level and playmakers and all that. But up front, Utah is going to be probably one of the best challenges you have. So that's going to be a really key game. And then, of course, you got the Apple Cup. So, yeah, this is a pretty good home schedule. There's a lot going on here. But the Huskies, you know, and we talked about this going in this year, the 4-5 home road schedule and went 11-2. This year they're going into a 5-4 home schedule.
Right.
And so ideally that should set them up for a good conference record.
And hey, look, there is no complaining. If they make the Pac-12 championship next year, that's a heck of a schedule to navigate that. And then be playing in that game. They're going to earn it.
That's what we're not talking about. This 11-2 season, ranked number 8. You didn't have to play USC. You didn't have to play Utah, who are the two teams that are ranked right below you.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're not missing anybody this year.
Yeah, I mean, this year you're missing what? Colorado? No Coach Prime visit to Seattle.
UCLA.
Yeah. So I mean, I think the Huskies will have their work cut out for them this year, but they're 2023, but they have the talent to pull it off.
It's going to be a great season. And looking back on this, I wish if we could re-listen to this podcast from over the summer where we all came in with just some trepidation, where I think a lot of us, I said probably the same thing. I mean, I'm thinking, hey, 6 is the floor, 9's the ceiling. You know, I'll be honest, that was probably what I was thinking. I thought this team had enough coaching. They were going to make a bowl game, but were they not? I mean, 11? Come on. I mean, but you know, look, I think we saw the talent as the season drove on and how the team coalesced together and what this offense could do and the defense could do enough to keep them in games. But, boy, I'm psyched about 2023.
Man, how many unfinished business T-shirts are going to be floating around Husky Stadium next year?
A lot of them.
You know what? To that point, I think let's talk about it for a sec. Because 2020, the Huskies won the North. They had COVID and couldn't appear in the championship game. And ZTF was quoted as saying, like, I've been watching two championship games that we should have been playing in. And in 2022, you know, they lost a complicated tiebreaker. They were the one of the three or one of the two or three odd men out of a four-team tiebreaker. And, I mean, you just got bad luck, you know. That's two seasons the Huskies should have been playing for the championship. And, you know, you put it together with what we've done since 2016, and this program, you know, takes a back seat to no one on the West Coast, BT.
I love it. I think it's great. And I think this is a team that comes together that has the attitude and learn from this year where, as you talked about, Utah at home, Oregon at home, Oregon State on the road, USC and Michigan State all on the road. We have some tough games. I don't see this team – I don't think they have an Arizona State in them this year. I think the team is going to gel well enough and has learned together where, like, you know, if they lose a game next year, it's going to be to a really solid team.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, if you look at the program, the years that we've excelled at Washington is when you had senior leadership come back.
That's right.
The last time We reached the mountain and went to the CFP. You had Jake Browning. You had Miles Gaskin. You had Greg Gaines saying, I'm coming back.
That's right.
And that is the formula on what usually gets us to where we all hope to be. And that's kind of what's lining up for next year. That's now, right. The problem's going to be managing expectations and making sure these guys come out of the gate ready to go.
That's right. And what's arguably a tougher schedule.
It's definitely a tougher schedule. And 7-2, you know, might get it done. But like this year, you might end up in a weird tiebreaker and you might be going to the Alamo Bowl.
That's
so
right. Yeah.
I think that, you know, this year that was a pleasant, you know, surprise to be 10-2 and in that Rose Bowl conversation. Next year, that's where this team's expected to go. So an Alamo Bowl isn't going to feel as good next year. You're going to see some opt-outs if that happens.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, one last comment. Like, the thing that's kind of nagging at me is next year's schedule is going to be really tough, and there's going to be great competition in the Pac-12. Look, Oregon State's on the come, right, which is awesome. And I think it's great. It's good for the conference. Oregon's going to be there. USC. Utah's always good, like we mentioned. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Arizona and what Coach Prime does. Yeah. I bet you Coach Prime's going to catch some people next year,
right,
for sure. What's bugging me is, man, we're missing the expansion to 8 teams for the CFP by 1 year,
with
this class.
Because, right, yes,
like, our margin for error is
so
razor
minimal.
Thin. And that's the one bummer that I have of, like, oh, man, we're just off by a year.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is you've got a ton of huge contributors who are going to be seniors next year. Penix, Westover, Culp, Latuli Gassanoa, ZTF, Ulafoshio, Dom Hampton, Asa Turner. Those guys are all gone. Then you've got the juniors like Rome, Jalen, Tanufi, Raylan Trice. So this team could be decimated. Fautanu, Rosengarten. This team could be decimated going into 2025 or 24. You know, so I think this is kind of, there's a little bit of an urgency, I'd say, because the recruiting behind them, we don't know which of these guys is going to be able to step up and replace them.
This is the year. I think we know the margin for error is real small. It's going to take a Pac-12 championship. You probably can only lose one going into it. But, man, what a great time to be a Husky. I'm psyched for this season. Hey, can I get a Go Dawgs from everybody?
Go Dawgs.
Woof. Dawgs, let's do it. Oof.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Aquí estamos. Aquí nos quedamos. Y aquí ganamos. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington!